Hello and welcome to Volume 44, Number 28 of your weekly local news magazine, Grapevine. Brought to you by the Great Charmathon District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 12th of July, 2024. Hi, I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreader Andy. And in this week's issue, Holly Willoughby's convicted predator has a local connection, expansion at Northgate Hospital, a pub draws the line at customers swinging from their light fittings, and we will soon be welcoming the return of giant grasshoppers. In addition, the fire service have some seasonal advice, and Andy is at a weird Norfolk crossroads. All this coming your way during the next hour or so, but first, it's the birthdays. Two people for whom we send best wishes this week, John Porter, celebrates this Saturday the 13th, and Sheila Williams follows suit on Tuesday the 16th. Our very best wishes to you both. There's loads of news this week, so straight over to Andy.
Hi, and I now have the news. I'll start with a few stories of crime and general misbehaviour. And the first one, not a very pleasant story, I'll confess, but nevertheless. Provocative artworks were used by a man who claimed to be an artist in a bid to groom a 13-year-old girl into posing naked. Andrew Rundle, 51, sent explicit images to what he believed to be a young teen, asking, "Can I paint you?" Norwich Crown Court was told he had indulged in explicit chat online over a two-month period with a profile that he thought was a young girl, but was in fact a decoy account. He encouraged her to send him photos of herself, recreating explicit poses of sex acts, asked for her phone number, and queried what her mother would think if she knew what her daughter was doing. Oliver Haswell, prosecuting, said, "The communication has involved discussion of art and painting, and he had sent her images of women in sexually provocative poses. He referred to her posing and him being the artist. He was trying to encourage behaviour that may be acceptable for an adult, but not a child." Rundle of York Row Great Yarmouth admitted two charges of inciting and attempting to incite a child to engage in sexual activity. Judge Catherine Moore jailed him for 2.5 years, placed him on the sex offender register, and made him subject to a sexual harm prevention order for 10 years. She said after first making contact with the profile in January 2022, he had swiftly turned communications sexual. "This was no one-off. You persisted and elements of your behaviour became more serious," she said. The court had heard Rundle had mild learning difficulties, but Judge Moore said this was no reason for his behaviour and that he had made considerable efforts. "In my view, you knew full well what you were doing," she said. Daniel O'Donovan, mitigating, said he did have a genuine interest in art and many images he had sent were non-sexualised. "He is mortified by his behaviour, which is completely out of character," she added. And my second story is in a similar vein. Police are investigating reports of a man sexually assaulting a 13-year-old boy on a bus. The incident happened on Saturday, June the 8th, when a boy was boarding a bus from his home in Great Yarmouth to meet his friends in Norwich. He sat upstairs on the X11 first bus and was the only person on the top deck, until a man got on and is said to have sat next to the boy. The man is then reported to have continually touched the boy's leg inside his thigh and even attempted to kiss the boy before he exited the bus at Acle. The boy remained on the bus to see his friends in Norwich. His mum said he was left petrified after the incident and did not report it until 3 weeks after it happened, when he told a teacher at his school. As soon as the boy's mother was told, she immediately reported it to the police, and she said she's unhappy with how the police have dealt with the incident. In response, Norfolk Police stated, "The incident is under investigation." And another assault story. A concerned neighbour called police after hearing a woman scream, "I can't breathe, you're suffocating me," a court has heard. The man was woken at about 5:40 a.m. to screaming coming from a next door property in Great Yarmouth as Benjamin Comer, 43, assaulted his partner. Norwich Crown Court heard the neighbour call police after he heard very loud screams and Comer shouting at a female in an aggressive tone. Ian James, prosecuting, said the man in the neighbouring property heard the woman say, "Get off my neck, I can't breathe, you're suffocating me." He said the man called 999 as the commotion was still going on and estimated it lasted around 10 minutes. Mr. James said the victim thought Comer had become upset with her as she had gone out and he was jealous of what she might be getting up to. He said it had been a distressing episode for the victim, who suffered a bloody nose and bleeding to her right ear. Comer of Isaacs Road, Yarmouth, appeared at court on Friday after previously admitting assault occasioning actual bodily harm on September the 25th last year. The defendant, who has 55 previous convictions for 137 offences, including causing grievous bodily harm and battery, was sentenced to 9 months imprisonment by recorder Michael Turner. He said, "There is far too much domestic violence that goes on in the course of life in this country between partners." Recorder Turner added Comer had a disgraceful criminal record, but gave him credit for his guilty plea. Andrew Oliver, mitigating, said the victim had come back to Comer's in the early hours of the morning and was making a noise which he was concerned about, and he put his hand over her mouth to stop her shouting. He said it had been a spontaneous reaction, after which they both went out to the back of the property and were talking calmly until police arrived. Mr. Oliver said the injuries sustained were not the most serious and Comer should receive credit for his plea. The prosecution has been given 14 days to apply for a restraining order should the victim in the case decide that is what she wants. And yet more in this vein. The ex-partner of the man who plotted to murder Holly Willoughby said he broke a 15-year restraining order when he tracked her down in Great Yarmouth. Laura Roberts, 38, said Gavin Plum sent her threatening messages and turned up at her door in the town last June. Ms. Roberts, who has two children with Plum, said she reported him for rape and assault during their relationship, calling him a true monster and an evil predator. On Thursday, security guard Plum was found guilty of planning to kidnap, rape and murder Willoughby after a 7-day trial in Essex. The 37-year-old was arrested in October after he revealed the details of his twisted scheme to an undercover officer on a website called Abduct Lovers. When police raided his flat, they found bottles of chloroform and an abduction kit complete with handcuffs and cable ties. Miss Roberts first met Plum when she was 12 and they began dating when she was 19 and he was 18. She said Plum started to control her from the beginning of the relationship. "I have seen the darkest side to him and he is capable of evil," she said. The thought of what he was planning to do to Holly, what he did to me, it's what's keeping me awake at night. I had court orders and he broke them. He's an evil predator. Plum told the court that his extremely toxic relationship with Miss Roberts was to blame for his attempts to kidnap two air hostesses in 2006. He also said that his false imprisonments of two 16-year-old girls in a Woolworths store in 2008 was a cry for help to escape from his partner. But Miss Roberts said it was Plum who subjected her to almost constant abuse, hitting, slapping and kicking her. He would smirk and laugh at me as he stood over me, she said. He really, really enjoyed it when I was scared. It was a few months after their first child was born in 2007 that she found the strength to leave the relationship. After turning to her family and police for help, she said, "I got my son and escaped." In November 2008, shortly after she discovered she was expecting their baby girl, Ms. Roberts reported Plum for rape. She said the police investigated after I reported it, but the case was not taken further. I reported him to the police, but they said they didn't have enough evidence, so it was really disappointing. Then it wasn't long after that that he went on to attack those girls in Woolworths. It was following the Woolworths attack that the restraining order was put in place to prevent him from having contact with Ms. Roberts and his children. Plum will be sentenced for the plot to murder Holly Willoughby at Chelmsford Crown Court on July the 12th. Right, we're out of the crime reports, but I'm afraid we're into the politics, local and national to some extent. The council has unveiled proposals for revised housing allocation policy. Great Yarmouth Borough Council is initiating a public consultation on housing due to increased demand and reduced availability for social housing in recent years. An updated plan has been devised in order to manage expectations and ensure optimal utilisation of social housing. Councillor Emma Flaxman-Taylor, Great Yarmouth Borough Council's portfolio holder for housing, health and communities, said, "Like all local authorities, Great Yarmouth Borough Council is facing growing demands for social housing. Given the limited supply of properties we have available, it's essential we have a policy which makes the best use of all the resources we have. We hope as many people as possible will engage with the consultation, so we have a housing allocations policy that is fit for purpose and best serves the needs of everyone in the community. Modifications suggested include tweaking the local connection residency qualification, introducing financial qualification thresholds for the housing register, and adding new strategies to promote efficient allocation and prevent homelessness. Feedback can be submitted before 12 p.m. on September the 1st by visiting www.greatyarmouth.gov.uk/draft revised allocations policy and scheme. Bit long-winded, but I'm sure someone will find their way through it. And the new Great Yarmouth MP is in the news. He's launched an extraordinary attack on schools in his constituency, accusing staff of vilifying his party and telling pupils to encourage parents to vote Labour. Rupert Lowe, the Reform MP for Great Yarmouth, claimed to have received a number of reports from concerned parents about indoctrination at five schools in the town. He said he'd been told of incidents where teachers disparaged Reform, accusing pupils of racism for supporting its policies and pushed their own aggressive personal views. He claims one incident occurred during a visit to a school by the town's Labour candidate, Keir Cousins, as part of the election campaign. Mr. Lowe said he had not been able to verify the claims and declined to name the schools. But in a series of tweets, he said, I will be following up with each and every head teacher, making it abundantly clear that their responsibility to the children does not include forcing political opinions on impressionable young boys and girls. However, Mr. Lowe's actions have been criticised by Mike Smith Clare, deputy leader of Norfolk County Council's Labour Group, who called them unsubstantiated public witch hunt from a political newbie. Mr. Lowe made the allegations on Twitter, now known as X, on Monday, stating he had gathered a list of schools where teachers were allegedly pushing their own aggressive personal views about reform on young children. He added, "It doesn't matter if it's about reform, Green, Tory or whoever else. It's not acceptable." A more local government. Norfolk leaders are seeking reassurances about the county's new multi-million pound devolution deal will be honoured by the Labour government. Kay Mason-Billig, leader of Norfolk County Council, has been joined by education chiefs and business bosses in urging the new government to make a fresh commitment to the county deal. That £600 million deal, which would see a transfer of power from Whitehall to the County Council and the public voting for a directly elected Norfolk County Council leader, was offered by the previous Conservative government. Mrs. Mason-Billig, leader of the Tory-controlled County Hall, said she was optimistic Labour was committed to devolution. But she is sending a letter, backed by leaders at universities, colleges and business groups, seeking confirmation of the deal, agreed in principle in December 22, can go ahead as planned. Mrs. Mason-Billig said, "The mood music from both front benches during the last Parliament was that devolution was the way forward. But, naturally, a change in government brings some uncertainty. So we are keen to ensure that there is still commitment to the Norfolk deal. I am writing to the new Secretary of State, Angela Rayner, to ask her to give us confirmation that our deal can still go ahead on its current timetable. I believe collaboration between partners is the way forward if we are to bring prosperity to Norfolk and find solutions to the problems that face our population. This is something which crosses political and social divides and unites us all in a common purpose, and we should not let this opportunity slip away." Norfolk's devolution deal includes an investment fund of £20 million a year for 30 years, control of the £12 million budget for adult education, and £7 million to kickstart housing on brownfield sites. Norfolk County Council will meet on July the 23rd to vote on whether to change its governance so the public vote for the directly elected leader can happen next May. Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer and Deputy Angela Rayner held a meeting with 11 metro mayors on Tuesday to emphasise the party's commitment to devolution. Ms. Rayner said, "Work will now continue at pace to deliver on manifesto commitments to transfer power out of Whitehall and into our communities, with upcoming devolution legislation to take back control."
Well, not more news in a while, but firstly, as we probably with unfounded optimism declare that summer is here, the seasonal advice from the fire service is a timely arrival.
Hello everyone, this is Bryn from Norfolk Fire and Rescue Service, North Earlham Blue Watch, and welcome to episode 4 of our key home safety messages, with this episode primarily focused on the summer season. During this episode, we have three key areas that we'd like to share with you. The first is water safety, second, barbecue safety, and third and final, the caravan safety. With regards to water safety, if you accidentally enter the water, then firstly, float to live. Try not to panic and fight your instinct to thrash around. Secondly, lean back, extend your arms and legs, and gently use them to help you float. Thirdly, control your breathing. Once the cold water shock has eased, call for help and swim to safety or wait until help arrives. You may have heard recently of how barbecues have contributed to some of the large fires we have seen around the country. Never use a barbecue, including disposable barbecues, indoors or on a balcony. Be careful where you position your barbecue. We suggest you do this on level ground, well away from anything flammable like sheds, fences, trees or tents. Be pet aware. Dogs, and sometimes cats, love to schnaffle sausages and can cause accidents getting under your feet. Carefully supervise children. Little ones can all too easily trip and fall, while older children might hurt themselves when trying to help. Our final focus area of this episode is caravan safety. Make sure you have a working smoke alarm in your caravan. It is just as important as having one in your home and just as dangerous not to. Ensure caravans and tents are at least 6 meters apart and away from parked cars. Make sure you know what the fire arrangements are on the campsite and where the nearest telephone is. Turn off all appliances before you leave your caravan or go to bed. If you smoke, use metal ashtrays and never smoke in bed. Remember, in all cases, if a fire starts, get out, stay out, and call 999. For further advice and to request a home safety visit from Norfolk Fire and Rescue Service, call 0300 123 1448. Or you can click Request a Home Fire Safety Visit from our website homepage at www.norfolk.gov.uk/fire. Alternatively, if you are a Suffolk resident, call 01473 260 588 or visit www.suffolk.gov.uk/Suffolk Fire and Rescue Service. Thank you for listening. Everyone at Norfolk Fire and Rescue Service wishes you a safe and pleasant summer.
Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer. Those days of soda and pretzels and beer. Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer. Dust off the sun and moon and sing a song of cheer. Just fill your basket full of sandwiches and wieners. Then lock the house up, now you're set. And on the beach you'll see the girls in their bikinis. As cute as ever, but they never get them wet. Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer. Those days of soda and pretzels and beer. Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer. You'll wish that summer could always be here.
Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer. Those days of soda and pretzels and beer. Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer. Dust off the sun and moon and sing a song of cheer.
Don't have to tell a girl and fella about a drive-in or some romantic movie scene. Why, from the moment that those lovers start arriving, you'll see more kissing in the cars than on the screen. Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer. Those days of soda and pretzels and beer. Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer. You wish that summer could always be here. You wish that summer could always be here. You wish that summer could always be here.
Nat Cole with some lazy, hazy days, following Fireman Brin's seasonal advice. Time, I think, for more news, followed very closely by Weird Norfolk at the crossroads.
And now, in a bit of a change, I've got a few stories about the lifeboats around our coast. A pair became stranded when their dinghy was blown far into the sea. The inflatable had drifted more than 1,500 feet from Galston Beach due to high winds. Great Yarmouth and Galston Lifeboat were quickly sent out to rescue the two. The RNLI Inshore Lifeboat came alongside the vessel where they pulled the pair in, along with their inflatable. They were given a medical check while on board, where the two had a lucky escape and hadn't suffered any injuries. They were taken back to the beach, where they were met by the Coast Guard mobile team, safe and well. For more lifeboat? Historic photographs from the RNLI archive have been shared to mark the life-saving charity's 200th anniversary. Sites in Norfolk featured in the interactive map, including the Never Turn Back pub and the Beecham Lifeboat Memorial in Caister, Cromer Pier and Wells Lifeboat Station. The RNLI and Historic England are inviting the public to contribute their own photos, memories and information through the Historic England Missing Pieces project. Through the project, Historic England invites everyone to discover listed places in their local area and contribute photos, videos, stories and memories to the National Heritage List for England. Duncan Wilson, Historic England Chief Executive, said, "This fascinating collection of our historic sites tells the story of the men, women and communities who have made our seas safer over the past 200 years. Their dedication, bravery and sacrifice have helped to save so many lives and their stories inspire us. This is a great opportunity to discover places around England with history connected to the RNLI and to add your part to the story," he added. The Never Turn Back pub in Caister is named in memory of the Caister lifeboat tragedy of November the 13th, 1901. During severe weather, the lifeboat Beecham capsized while attempting to save a vessel in distress. 9 men were killed and only 3 survived. Since then, the phrase "never turn back" became the motto of the Caister lifeboat crew and has been adopted throughout the RNLI. Caister was an RNLI station at the time of the disaster, but is now independent. Cromer Lifeboat Station, established in 1804 and taken over by the RNLI in 1857, had a lifeboat station and slipway constructed at the end of Cromer Pier in 1923. A new all-weather lifeboat house and slipway was completed in 1998. Wells Lifeboat Station was established in 1830 and taken over by the RNLI in 1869. The first boathouse was built in 1869 at a cost of £300. It was closed in 1895 and sold to Wells UDC at a cost of £75. And a rescue. A boat came stuck in the Norfolk Broads after a major failure left it needing a rescue. The cruiser became stranded on the River Yare on Saturday evening, blocking the busy route. Due to its position, the boat was at further risk of being a danger and required urgent help. A call was made to Humber Coast Guard, who tasked Hemsby Lifeboat, who made the decision to tow the vessel back to a safe location in Great Yarmouth. The Galston Coast Guard team also attended the scene, ensuring the safety and well-being of all involved and confirming the vessel was secure. My last lifeboat story. Hundreds of people made their way to a village lifeboat station to attend the blessing ceremony of a new £1.6 million life-saving vessel. Caister Lifeboats campaign to see in their new Medina-class boat continues as the blessing service invited the Deputy Lord Lieutenant and other dignitaries on Sunday. As well as the new boat's blessing, the crew unveiled the list of all the people who had donated more than £25 to the ongoing Keep the Boat Afloat campaign. Coxswain Guy Gibson said it was a momentous occasion, and now the new lifeboat is almost ready to begin service. "We're incredibly pleased with the boat," he said. "We've been carrying out exercises regularly, and all that's left is a few night launches. We expect her to be in action in the next 4 weeks." Once the new vessel is ready for service, the lifeboat station will sell its current craft, the Bernard Matthews II. Lifeboat chairman Paul Garrard said the ceremony was a proud day for the village, the borough and the county. "We couldn't have done this without all the generosity of the public, our crew and volunteers," he said. "We'd like to say a great thanks to everyone who came down." Visiting the village from Brightlingsea, Essex, Catherine Burney and her family began scanning the names listed on the hull before coming across that of her late husband, Roy. "He loved coming to Caister, and he would have loved to have known his name was here," said Mrs. Burney. "Roy passed in April 2022, and we knew we wanted to celebrate his life with something that would also assist the lifeboat service. And Roy loved Caister so much it was an easy choice to make. It fills us with pride to see his name here." Plans are in action for the official naming ceremony, which will be awarded to the largest owner of the lifeboat station's campaign. However, details are yet to be announced. For more information, visit www.casethelifeboat.org.uk/keeptheboatafloat. And moving on now to healthcare and care in its wider sense. A new unit in Yarmouth. A new hospital unit will be built in the town, with hopes it could reduce waiting times for patients. Great Yarmouth Borough Council has approved an application by the James Paget University Hospital to build a community diagnostic centre at the Cranbrook Centre, Northgate Hospital. It is hoped the new unit, employing 40 staff, will significantly improve healthcare services in and around Great Yarmouth by shortening waiting list times and reducing travel. The refurbished and extended building will provide a CT scanner, 5 consulting rooms and 6 treatment rooms, as well as 2 echo rooms with associated ancillary accommodation. The application will redevelop a small area of the wider Northgate Hospital site. According to documents submitted with the application, there are broad ranges of deprivation in the Norfolk and Waveney integrated care system, with both Norwich and Great Yarmouth being hotspots. In April, it was revealed that the James Paget Hospital had the second longest waiting times for routine treatments for patients in England. And keeping going with the care theme, this refers to a hospice. St Elizabeth East Coast Hospice is set to hold its inaugural Daisy Day Remembrance event this August. The occasion invites friends and family in the Great Yarmouth and Waveney area to honour loved ones by marking special daisies. The event, free to attend, will be on August the 3rd from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Waveney Memorial Park near Beccles. Participants can expect hundreds of unique handmade daisy markers displayed in colourful wheelbarrows next to the park's water feature. Each daisy will bear the name of a friend or relative who has died. Catherine Shepherd, the individual giving manager at St Elizabeth East Coast Hospice, said, "Daisy Day will provide the chance to pause and celebrate the lives of loved ones no longer with us, while we join together with the community in the stunning surroundings of Waveney Memorial Park. We look forward to welcoming all to the event, which is sure to be a poignant occasion." The hospice, which also works closely with the East Coast Community Healthcare, has cared for over 4,900 patients and their families since April 2019. To dedicate a daisy or to find out further information, visit www.stelizabethhospice.org.uk/daisy-day. And the last of the health and care series, a mobile dementia simulator based in a bus has visited the region, offering the public a taste of living with dementia. The interactive training experience was hosted by home care provider Bluebird Care East, Suffolk, Great Yarmouth and Lowestoft as part of a tour aimed at increasing understanding about dementia. It saw a dementia bus make stops at Beacon Innovation Centre in Galston and the Riverside Business Centre in Lowestoft, attracting the attention of Mayor of Great Yarmouth, Penny Carpenter, and Deputy Mayor of Lowestoft, Councillor Elise Youngman. Various members of the community, charities, care groups, and Bluebird Care Team members participated in the training. The experience was designed to mimic the daily challenges faced by dementia patients. Mittens, altered glasses, headphones and spiked insoles were used to impair mobility, vision and hearing and to cause discomfort, all common experiences people with dementia face. Bluebird Care East Suffolk, Great Yarmouth and Lowestoft recently opened an office in Galston. It aims to provide independence for residents in their homes. The organisation works extensively with people living with dementia and their families across the area. Kerry Books, director at Bluebird, said, "We're delighted to invite guests from across our local community into the mobile dementia simulator to increase understanding about how to support those living with the condition." She added that training had shed a new light on the many different symptoms that a person with dementia can be experiencing, to enhance the support we can offer those in our care. Councillor Youngman said, "I'm extremely grateful to Bluebird Care for organising the mobile dementia simulator experience and allowing me to gain a valuable insight into dementia." And now a couple of environmental stories, I suppose. Animals. Are they animals? Insects. Anyway, first one, definitely. A rare grasshopper is set to make its long-awaited return to the Norfolk Broads next weekend after an absence of 85 years. The large marsh grasshopper was last recorded in the Broads in 1939, after its populations declined due to changing land use and habitat loss. But now, Britain's biggest grasshopper is set to return to its former haunts after Natural England granted permission for captive bred grasshoppers to be released in the Wheatfen Nature Reserve in Sirlingham, outside Norwich. The species has already been successfully reintroduced to sites in West Norfolk as part of the Hop of Hope project, led by the social enterprise Citizen Zoo, alongside partners Norfolk Wildlife Trust and Natural England. This new attempt to further expand the grasshopper's range into the Broads has been coordinated and funded by volunteer-led community organisation the South Yare Wildlife Group. The first release is due on July the 14th, with a second batch planned on August the 18th. Jake Zarins, part of the Wildlife Group committee, said, "We're very lucky to have Wheatfen on our doorstep, which is an internationally renowned example of broadland habitat, with lots of rare species in it already. And we're particularly excited to get involved with this reintroduction to get more species back into their rightful place, where they're supposed to be. We're very aware of the excitement and interest that species reintroductions are bringing to the conservation movement across the country. So we thought this was a really good way to get involved in something that could create excitement in the local community and show what a special place we have here and wildlife that is worth protecting. The Wildlife Group has been working with the Hop of Hope project team and the Ted Ellis Trust at Wheatfen for several years to assess the suitability of local sites and secure the required authorisation, said Mr. Zarins. The grasshoppers were raised by 17 local volunteers known as citizen keepers, who were trained to incubate eggs and raise hungry broods of young grasshoppers in specialist heated vivariums in their homes before they were ready for release. Mr. Zarin said it was important to involve volunteers and community groups to give people the chance to engage directly with local conservation efforts. The power of community and smaller groups to influence the protection and recovery of nature is really important, he added. The project partners hope Wheatfen can be the first of many reintroduction sites across the Broads. And my other nature story. The village of Winterton has officially become a hedgehog-friendly community. The whole community worked to make a safe environment for hedgehogs as part of a campaign combating the recent decline in hedgehog populations across the UK. This included projects like a boat builder making 18 homes for the hedgehogs to nest and hibernate, and installing tunnels to monitor their movements and favourite routes in the village. It also saw the facilitation of free movement of the prickly creatures by initiating the creation of hedgehog highways, 13-centimetre holes in fences and obstacles, allowing them to make the most of garden habitats and forage freely. Emma Punchard, chairwoman of the Winterton-on-Sea Parish Council Environment Group, said, "This is a brilliant project. Over 70 villagers have been involved, and we're delighted to have so many people come forward to want to make their gardens better places for wildlife, including hedgehogs." According to the British Hedgehog Preservation Society, hedgehog numbers have seen a serious decline in recent years, dropping by an alarming 50% since 2000. Much of this has been down to habitat loss, pesticide usage and road traffic. The parish council has also been tracking hedgehog sightings and evidence of their presence in the area, contributing to the nationwide Big Hedgehog Map project. The village initiative has received funding from the Norfolk Rivers Trust's Access to Nature project, which aims for a broader move across a greener, more sustainable future for communities across Norfolk. For more information about the Winterton Initiative, or to get involved with the village scheme, email wintertonhedgehogs@gmail.com or call 07900 376 462. And now a bit more about young people. A high school in Great Yarmouth has been praised by the Education Watchdog as a place where pupils can thrive and achieve their potential. Great Yarmouth Charter Academy, part of Inspiration Trust, has been rated good by Ofsted for the second time in a row. Inspectors visited the school over 2 days in June and described it as a safe and structured environment. The relationships between staff and pupils are positive. It's common to see staff eating lunch with pupils and engaging them in conversation. The most disadvantaged pupils are provided with a range of opportunities to ensure they can succeed. From breakfast club to subsidised activities, the school takes its role in ensuring pupils have the chance to thrive very seriously, inspectors said. The report noted the programme for supporting pupils who struggle to read is a real strength of the school. It also said that most pupils make the right decisions in terms of their behaviour, but the school recognises that levels of suspension are high and not all pupils are attending school often enough. An area where the school could improve was communicating changes in behaviour policy more effectively. Principal Dean Rosenberg said, "We're incredibly pleased with the outcome, a testament to all the hard work our staff and pupils have put in to make Charter what it is today. The amazing opportunities our pupils receive has been recognised as a real strength of the Academy, and I thank all that have dedicated time and effort to make this happen." Louise Jackson, Secondary Director at Inspiration Trust, said, "This outcome is something to be celebrated by the whole of Great Yarmouth Charter Academy community, pupils, staff and parents. The school prides itself on having high expectations for behaviour and has built a culture based on mutual respect and celebration." I have another in the Weird Norfolk series of stories of long ago, this one of witchcraft and ghostly hauntings. It's called The Haunting of Hardley Crossroads. When churchyards yawn and hell itself breathes out contagion, the witching time of night is when the spectral woman appears, clad in red and seemingly tethered to the remains of a cross stone which once towered over this lonely patch of Norfolk. Just a stone's throw from Loddon, at the edge of a field where three roads and a dirt track converge, and almost within view of Hardling Church, there stands a block of stone which has stood sentry at this point for centuries. Cross stones predate the building of churches. In the 6th and 7th centuries, wooden crosses marked the place where priests or monks would preach to the local community. These were later replaced with stone crosses, such as the Hardley Stone, and therefore many villages still have the remains of the old preaching crosses, even if they're only stumps. In the world of magic and folklore, crossroads are seen to represent a location between our world and the spirit world, and as such, a place where supernatural spirits can be contacted, and paranormal events are even more likely to take place. Symbolically, crossroads represent a place which is neither here nor there, a hinterland betwixt and between. Criminals and those who took their own lives were often buried at crossroads, a spot where it was felt they would be lost and unable to make their way to heaven. And they were also a place where Old Nick would regularly lurk, hoping to tempt a mortal into a pact that would eventually lead them down to his fiery lair. Local stories, first recorded by the 9th century folklorist William Blythe Jerish, claim that on certain nights of the year, an old woman in red appears at midnight, sitting on the stone on the corner of Crossstone Road, watching over all directions, guarding the place where all four meet. Ghosts generally prefer a monochrome wardrobe, white, grey or black, but the Hardley Stone ghost is triumphantly dressed in red, a colour associated by many paranormal researchers as being a spirit energy, which is protective of a particular place or person, and by others as a sign that the ghost in question is demonic. Between 1968 and 1974, the Institute of Psychophysical Research in Britain interviewed almost 2,000 people who said that they had seen one or more ghosts. Despite long-held beliefs that sightings of ghosts generally involved a translucent entity, between half and two-thirds of those interviewed reported that the spirits they had seen were at least partially coloured, with coloured clothing or hair. In Chinese culture, red is the colour which is most attractive to ghosts, and it is believed that if you bury a murdered or wronged person in red clothes, you are enabling them to return from the spirit world in order to wreak their revenge against those who put them in their grave. The Lady in Red is one of Vancouver's most famous ghosts, who haunts the historic Fairmount Hotel on West Georgia Street, which was built in 1939. Walking the top floors in an elegant red gown and occasionally stopping at the window to stare wistfully out over the city. The Japanese have a very specific demon, Akamanto, who haunts women's bathrooms, asking those who visit whether they would like to wear a red or blue coat. Don't look the full story of Akamanto up before visiting a public toilet. Is the Hardly Lady in Red sitting close to a spot where she died? Is she waiting an eternity for someone to meet her? Could she be a demon waiting to claim a soul to drag down to hell or make a pact with a mortal in return for a favour? Be wary when you approach the crossroads at Hardly late at night, unless you fancy dancing with the devil, cheek to cheek.
Heaven, I'm in heaven, and my heart beats so that I can hardly speak, and I seem to find the happiness I seek when we're out together dancing cheek to cheek. Heaven, I'm in heaven, and the cares that hung around me through the week seem to vanish like a gambler's lucky streak when we're out together dancing cheek to cheek. Oh, I love to climb a mountain and to reach the highest peak, but it doesn't thrill me half as much as dancing cheek to cheek. Oh, I love to go out fishing in a river or a creek, but I don't enjoy it half as much as dancing cheek to cheek. Dance with me, I want my arm about you, the charm about you will carry me through to heaven. I'm in heaven, and my heart beats so that I can hardly speak, and I seem to find the happiness I seek when we're out together dancing cheek to cheek.
Fred and Ginger dancing cheek to cheek. OK, it's that time again to get you fully up to date with the rest of this week's local news.
A police officer paid a visit to Ormston Cliff Park Primary Academy, offering pupils an exciting glimpse into the world of law enforcement. The school's reception pupils were presented with the opportunity to experience the ins and outs of police work firsthand, as PC Carroll gave a rundown on her duties. The children took time to admire a real police car and its features, even getting the chance to hear the siren. PC Carroll allowed them to don actual police uniforms and helmets, thereby introducing them to the career in a more in-depth manner. Speaking of the role played by the police in safeguarding the community, PC Carroll mentioned what inspired her to join the force. Academy Principal Louise Watkins said, "Having PC Carroll come and visit our pupils was such an incredible opportunity for them to see one of their heroes in real life and to hear about the important role the police play in serving our community. I'm sure we'll have lots of aspiring police officers at Ormiston Cliff Park who can't wait to start helping their community." Theme parks. The nominees have been announced for the UK Theme Park Awards 2024, and there's great representation from Norfolk. The awards, which are now in their fifth year, are organised by themeparksuk.com, and there are 22 categories. In advance of the public vote, which will be open from July the 22nd to September the 1st, a shortlist has been compiled using public nominations with the help of a panel of expert judges. The 2024 Norfolk nominees are Bewilderwood Horning, which has been nominated for Best Theme Park for Families, Best Theme Park for Toddlers, Best Customer Service, and Best Marketing Campaign for Super Sock Party. Great Yarmouth Pleasure Beach is up for Best New Attraction for its Ghost Ship and Best Seaside Park. Pettit's Animal Adventure Park is there for Best Theme Park for Toddlers. Raw Dinosaur Adventure, Lendwade, is there for Best Theme Park for Families, Best Theme Park for Toddlers, and Best Accessibility Initiative for its Inclusivity video. In Suffolk, Pleasurewood Hills is nominated for Best Seaside Park, Best Theme Park Map, and Best Value Theme Park. The awards ceremony will take place on September the 19th, 2024, and voting links will be available at ukthemeparkawards.com. And another best park, not a theme park this time, a holiday park that launched more than 100 years ago in Norfolk has been named the UK's best. Potter's Resorts, which has two all-inclusive sites in Hopton in Norfolk and Maldon in Essex, came out at the top of the list by Which magazine, which surveyed more than 1,700 people about their experiences at UK holiday parks in the last 2 years. They asked them to rate their stays on 11 criteria, including quality of accommodation, customer service, cleanliness, facilities and activities, and value for money. Visitors awarded Potter's the full 5 stars for the variety of free facilities on offer, the quality of facilities and activities, and the quality of the entertainment and communication, as well as 4 stars for overall customer service, food and drink, value for money and quality of accommodation. Potter's beat household names including Butler's and Pontins, which both ended up in the bottom 5. Potter's Resorts was founded by Herbert Potter in 1920. Herbert was one of 18 children who were raised in Norwich in a home situated where the Forum is today. In his youth, he cycled from Norwich to Great Yarmouth and spent his summers at Caister Camp, which inspired him to create his own holiday park. His first park was located near Hemsby and is widely considered the first permanent and mixed-use holiday camp in the UK. In 1924, he acquired land closer to the sea in Hopton and relocated. The firm opened its second camp in 2021 when it acquired the Five Lakes Resort in Essex, but has retained Norfolk as its headquarters. Potter's is now in its fourth generation of the Potter's family under John Potter. And John Potter said of the Which Survey, "This accolade is one our whole team can be proud of, and a huge thank you to our amazing guests for taking the time to participate in the survey. We proudly came top the last time Which revealed their results in 2022, while transitioning to an all-inclusive and opening Five Lakes as a second destination. We're thrilled this latest survey reflects how our guests have embraced our new offering. Many of the private equity-backed companies in the survey have huge marketing budgets, but for us, positive word of mouth continues to be the single most important factor behind our 104-year story. As the last standing of the original pioneering families in the industry, it means the world to hear guests say we are number one, especially through an independent survey from such a highly respected consumer champion like Which. It's right up there with our Customer Excellence Awards, our TripAdvisor Traveller's Choice Award, and retaining five-star status from Visit England. And it's all down to the dedication of our brilliant team and our wonderful guests. And an industry story. Things are picking up for a forklift company after invested £1.5 million as part of the firm's expansion along the coast. Eastern Forklift Trucks has opened its new 8,000 square foot unit on Lefevre Way by the Gapton Hall retail park. The firm promises a forklift paradise for people looking to buy, lease or train in vital equipment. Managing Director Paul Briley says he has long aimed to open a depot in the town after he made ties there during his time in sales. It's a great place to be, but for years it's been difficult for customers to find anything local in the area, he said. We're very pleased to be on people's doorstep, and our premises and yard are a great addition to the town. Dealing in machinery made by the likes of Hangcha, Combilift and Mitsubishi, the firm also provides on-site training as part of their latest £1.5 million investment. Seven new members, including two engineers from Gorston, have joined the firm to help bolster its operation. For more information, visit www.easternflt.com. And now a whole little series of pub stories. A village pub is cracking down on unruly behaviour after reports of punters swinging on lights during England's last game at the Euros. Management at the gate in Caister said they will operate a no wristband, no entry policy after damage was caused to the pub during Saturday's quarter-finals, which saw England beat Switzerland on penalties. The pub announced on its Facebook page, "Thank you to everyone who's joined us so far for Euros 2024 and to support England with us. We have enjoyed your custom and the atmosphere. However, going forward for the remainder of the games, there will be some slight changes, unfortunately due to damage caused to our pub during today's game." The customer noticed explained, "The remaining England games will be wristband entry only, and on a first-come, first-serve basis, with the use of the front door on the high street only. Once the pub has reached its maximum capacity, people will be barred from entry. Wristbands will be available to collect from bar staff Tuesday evening onwards, up until the England-Netherlands kick-off on Wednesday night." And you know, I think we all probably know the result of that game. And we look forward to the next one. An awards ceremony win. A local pub, has celebrated a double win at an awards ceremony run by beer lovers. The Blackfriars Tavern in Great Yarmouth has been declared both Pub of the Year and Cider Pub of the Year by Norfolk Camera. The commendations were presented in the pub in Blackfriars Road with representation from both the local and regional divisions of Camera in attendance. It is said receiving this dual recognition has underscored the venue's commitment to providing excellence within the real ale and cider community. Landlord Ferez Smith said, "We're delighted with this dual award at county level for real ale and real cider excellence across Norfolk. It comes down to three things: using great ales from fantastic local brewers and having a great selection of ciders showcasing cider makers both local and from further afield, having welcomed customers who respect each other and also welcome visitors, and the helpful support given by the local Camera branch since we purchased the freehold just over 4 years ago." Blackfriars Tavern boasts an inviting atmosphere, an on-site microbrewery, and an extensive selection of more than 100 Belgian bottle beers, as well as many other specialist drinks. Serving up to 15 local ales and more than 40 still ciders, it's renowned for its commitment to the community and industry quality. It is said this dual recognition is seen as a victory over the adversity brought on by the pandemic. Purchased as a derelict during the first COVID lockdown after being closed for 5 years, the tavern is also praised as a beacon of community and resilience. East Norfolk Camera's chairman, Mark Lewis, said, "Blackfriars Tavern was voted as the top pub within our area for the quality of both their real ale and cider, their exceptional service and their welcoming community focus." Blackfriars now progresses to the regional round for Pub of the Year. And some new pub landlords who helped shelter period following a fire in Great Yarmouth have officially moved in behind the bar of a popular town premises. Heidi and Simon Palmer have taken over the King's Arms on Northgate Street. The married couple said they intended to build on the establishment's warm, communal and family-friendly reputation. Mr. Palmer said, "While our first day, official day, was Friday, we had been here for a few weeks with the previous publicans to get to know everyone, and we soon realised just how strong the community spirit is here during that awful fire a few weeks ago." Mr. and Mrs. Palmer, along with the previous landlords Michael and Melanie Pybell, turned the pub into a refuge centre for those affected by the fire, which broke out inside flats and the tanning salon across the street on June the 22nd. People were offered shelter, warm drinks and food, while firefighters tackled the blaze during the morning. "This place has a real community feel and it's family friendly, which is vital for us and for the area," said Mrs. Palmer, who was previously the general manager at the Smokehouse in Ormsby. "And that's what we want to continue to promote here. The previous publicans did a wonderful job for 18 years, and we're big shoes to fill. But other than putting our stamp on a few things cosmetically and updating the menu, we feel if it's not broken, don't fix it. We intend to keep this place friendly and a hub for local people, businesses and clubs, and we want to welcome new and old customers." Since taking over, the Palmers have added a touch of paint to the windowsills and have plans to add a children's play area at the back to ensure the family environment continues to be a main attraction. "Simon and I had always talked about running a pub," Mrs. Palmer added. "When we saw this place come up, we knew we had to take the opportunity. This is the best pub in Great Yarmouth, and we're proud to be here." For more information, visit the King's Arms Great Yarmouth on Facebook. And an interesting entertainment story. They were a double act who had the crowds rolling in the aisles in Great Yarmouth in the 80s and 90s. Cannon and Ball were a regular fixture at the town's Britannia Pier, packing the venue with their zany shows famous for the catchphrase, "Rock on, Tommy." And now, Tommy Cannon will be returning to the town that holds special memories for him as he's set to embark on his first solo theatre tour. Rock on, Tommy will be performed at St George's Theatre on Friday, October the 25th. Mr Cannon is ready to take to the stage again, without his much-missed sidekick Bobby Ball, who lost his life to COVID. He said, "In the early days of COVID, I was still performing regularly with Bobby, who was my stage partner for 59 years in our special double acts, Cannon and Ball. Sadly, during COVID, Bobby passed away suddenly, and I felt extremely vulnerable, desperately low and hugely depressed. My confidence had gone as I'd lost my entertainment soulmate and partner of nearly six decades. I just felt lost and sad." He credits Robbie Williams for inspiring this new chapter of his career. He said, "Robbie invited me and my family to his last tour as special guests. And when we met up after his show in Manchester, he made me feel so welcome and relevant. In fact, during his concert, he introduced me to the 22,000 plus crowd and had everybody chanting my name. I can't wait to get started with my solo tour. I'm so looking forward to getting back to Great Yarmouth. It will always be an area that holds super special memories for me." The show at St George's Theatre on Friday, October the 25th, will start at 7:30 p.m. Visit www.stgeorgestheatre.com. And a couple of donation stories to round off with. Is it to round off? Yes. A man who wrote a play about his experiences with severe depression has donated more than £1,500 to the hospital that helped him recover. Peter Dewar became hooked on prescription painkillers and spent weeks recovering at Northgate Hospital in Great Yarmouth. Mr. Dewar then wrote a moving play about his personal battle with depression and the impact it had on his family. Mr. Dewar's play, Matt, was staged for two nights at St. George's Theatre, Great Yarmouth, in June. Ticket sales and donations amounted to £1,553.40, which he has donated to Northgate Hospital. He said, "I would never have made it without the help I received at Northgate and the support of my parents. Writing Matt was hard, but it helped me to process what had happened." Donna Parkin, Deputy Business Support Manager at Northgate Hospital, said, "It's great for this hospital to receive donations like this, and it will go a long way towards helping patients here." The play, funded by the Arts Council, featured five professional actors and was directed by Mr. Dewar. And my last story, Great Yarmouth Police Cadets have diligently fundraised for the East Anglian Air Ambulance for 6 months. Initiatives included a family Christmas bingo night, Easter egg raffle, and selling puzzle books. To conclude their efforts, Cadet Leader PC Heather Wright and Police Cadet Alfie Howells completed a skydive. The total raised was £2,072. And the team visited East Anglian Air Ambulance based in Norwich on July the 5th to tour the facility and present the funds.
Well, that's it for this week's edition, which is copyright 2024 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accepts responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Don't forget, you can contact us from our website at grapevinegy.org if you have any queries over our service. Your newsreader next week will be Margaret. So, We hope for your company then for much more of your local news. In the meantime, from all at Grapevine, stay safe and well, and bye for now.